Sea Radar Extra. Second episode. Eric Taves and HC talking to Dan Bernstein about his 27C3 talk, High Speed, High Security Cryptography, Encrypting and Authenticating the Whole Internet.
Okay, test?
Testing. A few words. Louder, louder. So maybe it should be closer, closer. Yeah, that's probably pretty good. What are we aiming for? Between minus 12 and minus 6. Okay.
Good evening. This is Eric Tiffs. I'm here on the CCC Congress together with Daniel Bernstein. So first, who are you?
Hi, I'm Dan Bernstein. You wanted to know something else?
Yeah, of course. What did you do so far? What do you run currently?
You mean what operating system do I run?
No, what's your current main project?
Oh, what am I writing? My main project right now is an internet encryption and authentication project. So I'm trying to cryptographically protect the whole internet.
Okay, sounds an interesting approach. So how did you get started with all of that?
Well, once upon a time, I was using the internet and found my account broken into. And I found it kind of traumatic because I don't think that my files should be exposed to other people. I don't think that my email and my web pages, if I'm keeping them private, I don't think they should be exposed to other people. And thought, hey, I should do something about this. Now, that was quite a few years ago, but it's still one of the major goals that drives me in writing software today.
So I assume many people might not know you, but they have already used your software, or at least that some part of their communication went through your software. So which projects did you do in the past years?
Well, maybe the project of mine that the most people actually use is called QMail, which is mail software, internet post office software, to send email through the network and receive email from the network. It's used by quite a few ISPs, internet service providers, and it's something that you use to set up a bunch of mailboxes for your users and to send email to other ISPs. Then more recently, I guess the second most popular project that I have is called DJB DNS, and that's software for looking up domain names, software for publishing your own domain names. So if, for instance, you're the operator of twitter.com, then you can run this to publish twitter.com. I don't actually know which DNS software twitter.com is using, but there's lots of domain names like citysearch.com that are using my software, and lots of domain names like yahoo.com that are using my mail software.
Of course, I'm using email myself, so when I write an email, I can encrypt the communication to my email server, and I can also encrypt the email itself using PGP or SMIME or any similar protocol. So what is wrong with this approach?
Well, actually, lots of things like PGP actually works really well if you can go to the effort of setting it up. If you have PGP working, then it's pretty good privacy. It actually, whether you're using PGP, the original, or GPG, it actually does a very good job of keeping your data safe. The problem is that it's not something which is easy to use by default. When you're talking to sending email to somebody that you've never sent email to before, or that isn't somebody who has an easy time setting up PGP or GPG, or you're downloading a web page, 99% of your internet communication has no cryptographic protection, and it's hard to imagine how you could get PGP working for all of that communication. Same thing for HTTPS. HTTPS has some pretty good security. It's got some security problems, but it's actually pretty good security. The problem is that most people don't use it and can't afford to use it. It's hard to set up and it's too slow for most people to use. So there's no way that I can imagine HTTPS and PGP being used for most internet communication.
So I think about 5 to 10 years ago, I was looking for ways to encrypt my network traffic itself. I found a project for the Linux kernel called FreeSwan, which was an open source IPsec implementation, who also aimed at encrypting the whole internet traffic by putting every machine's public key in the DNS system. So when I wanted to communicate with a machine, I could make a DNS query, check if this machine has a public key available, and if so, set up an IPsec connection with that machine. Why do you think this isn't used everywhere on the internet yet?
Well, I think IPsec actually is very popular for setting up virtual private networks. when you're talking to your own machines, like you're talking to your own gateway, talking to your own internet service provider, if you're a company with a big network or sometimes a university with a big network, you can actually set up IPsec for yourself or use something newer like OpenVPN running over SSH. It does a good job of protecting your own communications with your own machines. But somehow IPsec has never been usable for talking to machines that you don't know. IPsec has never been able to protect communication across the whole web. So you've never been able to use IPsec to talk securely to a web server. There's no way to get the public keys moving back and forth between the web server and all the people talking to the web server. IPsec is actually pretty successful for setting up your own virtual private network, but has been very unsuccessful at protecting the wider internet.
So what's different with your approach compared to IPsec, what most people might already know?
Well, what I'm trying to do is deploy really, really easy to use, really high security cryptography. What I'm not trying to do is protect the cryptography from having to be really fast. A lot of cryptographic projects on the internet say, ooh, the cryptography is really slow, and we can't assume that cryptography is going to be fast, because look, this cryptography is taking so much time, we're going to have to limit our use of cryptography. And then they try to add some security by using a little bit of cryptography. And I want to say, okay, suppose the cryptography is really, really fast, and imagine that it's just not a problem to use public key cryptography on every internet packet, then what happens? Well, actually, it turns out to be very easy to deploy some public key cryptography for everything you send through the internet. And it's not just that it turns into a very fast computation to do the cryptography. If you imagine cryptography is really fast, then you can also make it really easy to deploy. And then of course, it might sound crazy to say, well, cryptography is really, really fast because everybody knows it takes a lot of time for the computer. But actually, state-of-the-art cryptography really is very fast, and suddenly it becomes practical to do something really easy to deploy, something that really does encrypt and authenticate every internet packet.
So assume that usually when I check my internet connectivity, I can just ping another host like cradar.de. So if I would enter pings www.cradar.de, and if both hosts would be using a software, what would happen then?
So if you'd like to get a web page, for instance, let's look at the final communication. You want to download a web page from a web server. That's a typical internet communication. And what was the domain name that you mentioned?
cradar.de.
Okay, I'm not actually familiar with that one, but here's what would happen. Your computer says, okay, where is the server for this domain name inside .de? And it probably already has that information. It probably already has the DNS records which say where that .de name actually is. And then as part of looking up that name, it actually gets for free the public key of that server. That's something which the .de administrator puts into DNS. That whoever runs, .de and then any name .de, whoever's running those domains, they have control over the addresses and more. They can publish the addresses of their servers and the public keys of their servers. And then your computer connecting to those servers gets the public keys and then sets up a secure channel, secure communication to those servers. And now every packet that you would have sent before with no encryption, no authentication, suddenly has encryption and authentication from your key to the server's key.
Okay, to set up that channel, I assume you would at least need two algorithms. First one to exchange a key between both machines, and second one to encrypt the actual payload. So what is being used to that my machine gets a shared key between the machine and cradar.de?
Well, the classic answer would be something like RSA. So RSA has been around since the 1970s, and then you could use RSA encryption and RSA signatures to exchange a key with some authentication and encryption, so confidentiality for the key, and then use various ciphers like AES to encrypt each packet. But actually, it's much, much faster and much more confidence-inspiring to use something called elliptic curve cryptography, which was introduced in 1985. It's a little bit newer than RSA, but it actually has a much better security record than RSA. RSA, after it was introduced in the late 70s, had a major hit in security, a major loss of security in the early 80s from something called index calculus, particularly the linear sieve and the quadratic sieve, algorithms to attack RSA, to factor RSA keys. And then in the 1990s, it happened again. A newer index calculus algorithm called the number field sieve. Suddenly RSA was a lot less secure again. Elliptic curve cryptography was introduced in the mid-80s as a defense against index calculus. Said this major threat against RSA is going to be fixed by elliptic curves. That was the idea in the middle of the 80s, and it's worked perfectly. The elliptic curves that, say, take a strong 256-bit elliptic curve. This is what I recommend. If you do this in 1985, it takes 2 to the 128 operations to break by the algorithms people knew then. You do it today, it takes 2 to the 128 operations to break by the algorithms people know now. There's been no loss of security for elliptic curve cryptography, so it's really much more confidence-inspiring than RSA. And it's also faster. So it's really amazing that we get something that has a better security record than RSA, and it's faster than RSA. You use elliptic curve Diffie-Hellman to set up a secret key, and then secret key cryptography to encrypt and authenticate each packet.
Okay, so I would then use our Diffie-Hellman key exchange based on elliptic curve instead of other groups. How do I make sure that the machine on the remote end is really authentic?
Okay, you start out, for instance, suppose you're looking up, was it zradar.de? Yeah, so zradar.de, the administrator of zradar.de sets up his public key. Now, he uses that, he puts that into his computers where only he knows the secret key, so only he can send communications that appear to be from that public key. Now, he announces the public key inside DNS, and that's where everybody gets it. So when I'm connecting to zradar.de, well, if I don't know the key already, and if I don't know the address already, what I do is I talk to the .de servers. And the .de servers have received from the zradar.de administrator, they've received the address of zradar.de. And that address, the zradar.de administrator says, well, my servers are named NS1 and NS2, or he can choose whatever names he wants, .zradar.de. He tells that to the .de administrators. This is how it works right now. And then the .de administrators tell it to your computer. Your computer asks .de, and then the .de servers say, here's where to find the zradar.de servers. They're called NS1 and NS2, and they have these IP addresses. Well, there's no reason for them to be called NS1 and NS2. You can just call them, my public key is blah, 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 and my other public key is blah, blah, blah. And then that's something which works right now. You can put in public keys into DNS right now. Of course, you don't say my public key is, you say a number that software recognizes, but it works very easily right now. And then everybody around the internet sees that zradar.de has its DNS servers, which have these names that include the public keys and these addresses. And then software around the internet can ask those DNS servers, hey, where is www.zradar.de? And then you get the public key of the web server, and then you talk securely to the web server.
Okay, so I assume the remote server will sign his Diffie-Hellman messages or do something else to make sure that I'm really talking to him?
If you don't have the secret key that the zradar.de administrator set up, which is only on his computers, if you don't have that secret key and somebody tries talking to you and then you try to forge a packet that seems to be from that public key, you won't be able to do it. That's what the cryptographic solutions are trying to ensure. They're designed so that it's very hard to forge a packet or understand a packet. So violating the confidentiality or integrity of a packet protected by the cryptography, that's exactly what cryptographers are spending all their time making sure that you can't do as an attacker. The only way that you'll be able to forge a packet that seems to be from the zradar.de public key is if you actually know the secret key.
Okay, so when I'm then finished setting up the key, what algorithms are used by your approach to protect the confidentiality and integrity of the payload which is sent to zradar.de?
So for confidentiality and integrity, the standard choices are using for confidentiality the advanced encryption standard. Now, this is a cipher that was designed in 2000, it was standardized in 2000 after a few years of a public competition. And it's pretty good, but over the years, it's suffered from some problems. So the advanced encryption standard, as a cryptographer, I think it's certainly not bad. If you're encrypting stuff with AES, then you're doing certainly very well. But it's potentially vulnerable to what are called cache timing attacks. Now, this is where if you don't put a lot of work into the implementation and somebody else is running a process on the same machine as yours, maybe you have a multi-user computer, or maybe you're encrypting stuff in the kernel and somebody else has an account on the computer, or maybe somebody's been able to take control of some process on your machine without having an account on your machine, then using cache timing attacks, somebody can figure out your AES key. Because AES leaks information through its patterns of table lookups, unless you're really, really careful in the implementation. There's other potential issues with AES, which are not huge issues. Usually, if you're encrypting something with AES, you're just fine. But there's a newer series of ciphers which were evaluated by the eStream project within eCrypt. This is a European collaboration of cryptographers. The eStream project looked at a bunch of stream ciphers in the 2000s and came up with some ciphers which are faster than AES and don't have this problem. They're very easy to implement securely. And there are four finalists. The eStream project didn't choose one winner. It said, all right, here's four algorithms which look great. They're faster than AES and stronger. They've survived a lot of scrutiny by cryptanalysts. And one of those happens to be a design of my own called Salsa 20, and that's what I use for encryption. I don't mean to say anything bad about AES. If you're using AES, there's very little to worry about, but it's much easier to implement these newer stream ciphers securely than to implement AES securely. For authentication, there's actually an even better situation. There are some information theoretically secure message authentication codes. There are some authenticators where we know that they are as secure as the cipher that you're using. You still need a secure cipher, but if you have a secure cipher, then you're absolutely guaranteed that these message authentication codes are secure. And so I'm using one of those called Poly 1305, which is also very fast.
Okay, so did you already run that on a test machines or evaluate it in your lab? So what was the result?
Well, I'm able to encrypt and authenticate packets to new public keys, the slowest possible situation where every packet has a different public key, like somebody's forging packets with random public keys to try to waste my CPU time, or I'm just talking to millions of different clients and none of them ever show up again. If every single packet has a different public key, maximum use of CPU time, that's 1 million packets, 1 million new public keys in under a minute. And that's not on some very fancy CPU with some state-of-the-art accelerator or something. That's just a normal Core 2 quad. So this is something like 20 megabits per second to actually overflow one computer. Your typical computer doesn't have a 20 megabit per second connection. If you've got a gigabit per second connection to the wider area internet, then you probably have a bunch of computers that you're using for your servers, and then you spread your cryptography between those computers. So this is certainly fast enough to handle internet communication. Even if somebody's trying to flood you with bad cryptographic information, somebody's flooding you with new public keys, it's fast enough. And then if a public key gets repeated, if the normal situation, a client is trying to talk to you for several packets, or a server's trying to talk to a client for several packets, then the public key work is shared between those packets. So everything gets much, much faster. But even in the worst case situation, it's again, a million packets in under a minute. And that's certainly fast enough for the internet.
And did you check bandwidth usage too? So if I'm running on a very slow link, like my mobile phone's connection, how much additional bandwidth do I need to encrypt and authenticate all my network traffic?
You need a little bit. So the easy part to answer is that when you're authenticating a packet, it gets 16 bytes longer. Now, there's a little bit more cost than that. First of all, when you're setting up your public keys inside DNS, a public key is 32 bytes, and your names of your name servers each get longer by 32 bytes. But it's actually a little worse than that, because DNS doesn't allow you to have arbitrary binary data, at least not without triggering all sorts of software bugs. So what you have to do instead is turn your DNS names into something longer, about 50 bytes, which is a text version of your public key. So each of the answers that you give through DNS gets 50 bytes longer for each server name, and that's actually a noticeable cost. You can measure the extra space in DNS packets. And then on top of that, every packet that you send with cryptographic protection is 16 bytes longer. If you have a 1500 byte packet, it doesn't make a difference to have it be a little bit longer. If you have a short packet, then it does make a noticeable difference. But the number of packets stays exactly the same.
Okay, do I need any additional costs for handshakes or something like that?
So for CurveCP, which is the cryptographic replacement for TCP, there's a handshake just like the TCP handshake. And this is what tells the server that, yes, there is a client that's awake right now and talking to the server and gives authentication information about the client. For the client, also having the handshake says that, yes, the server is awake. So that's just like in TCP, same number of packets as in TCP. And the packets are a little bit longer than in TCP because they communicate public keys and they're all authenticated. But there's no extra round trip. So this is like what Google has been aiming for with Speedy and trying to make the web as fast as possible. They're trying to make a secure connection as fast as setting up a TCP connection. Just no extra overhead past that initial handshake. And, well, that's exactly where I'm at now.
Okay, sounds fine. So did you receive already some feedback? So if somebody interested in putting that into the default installation of an operating system or something like that, or of a device so that gets more widely deployed?
Well, the first announcement was here at CCC. The parts of it that already existed and completely implemented and distributed before, that's called DNS Curve, and that's the DNS part of this, not the HTTP part. So it's only protecting DNS information so far. That's been deployed on some sites on the server side, and then on the client side, the big user is OpenDNS, which is if a DNS administrator sets up DNS Curve public keys, then everything will be protected right now for all OpenDNS lookups. So there's a guarantee that the information the administrator's publishing is the information that the OpenDNS DNS clients actually get. At the same time, that's only DNS, and of course we need the web to be secure. What we really want to see from servers is not addresses of those servers. We want to see web pages. We want to see email, meaningful information. So DNS is just one part of the picture, and HTTP is the next step.
Okay, so if I want to try this, where can I find all that stuff?
Well, what you can try right now and download right now is the following. For DNS Curve, go to dnscurve.org, and that will point you to Curve DNS, which is a full DNS Curve forwarder, actually third-party forwarder, but I've looked through the code, and it's good. And then you can also get the cryptographic library, which is used for all this, which is the Networking and Cryptography Library, NACL, which is pronounced SALT. NACL, SALT, get it? Ha ha ha. So the SALT cryptographic library, that's online, has C and C++ interfaces, it's in the public domain, and it's been very thoroughly tested, much more thoroughly than OpenSSL. Very easy to use. There's a crypto box function, which does exactly what you want to do to completely protect a packet, authenticate it, and encrypt it from your key to somebody else's public key. What still hasn't been released is CurveCP. That's the replacement for TCP. So that's what you need for protecting your HTTP connections. But if you're interested in that, join the CurveCP mailing list. Go to curvecp-subscribe at list.cr.yp.to and then wait for the announcement of the CurveCP software.
Okay, thank you.
I have one last question. Are you aware of any situation where you need a lot of caching, where end-to-end encryption of every packet might be a problem, like Google, YouTube, or something who has servers in every big AS, caching all the content?
So caching is certainly a critical part of how a lot of the internet works. Right now, Akamai, for example, is responsible for caching the websites of a huge number of domains. And if Akamai disappeared, then right now the internet would collapse. Of course, this is predicting an apocalypse that won't actually happen because Akamai is not about to disappear. But the reality is that Akamai is doing a huge amount to reduce the load on the internet today. At the same time, this means that the companies that are relying on Akamai, like Microsoft, is publishing their web pages through Akamai. This means that Akamai has control over Microsoft's web pages. Now, you can view that as a security problem for Microsoft. Do they actually trust Akamai to run their web pages? Well, they are trusting Akamai to run their web pages. And to the extent that they're doing that, I would like to provide security for our connections to Akamai to retrieve whatever web pages Akamai is hosting. Beyond that, Microsoft might think, okay, can we actually handle the load ourselves? Can we actually not use Akamai for caching? So far, they've decided it's better for them to rely on Akamai, but it does mean that Microsoft trusts Akamai to run their web pages properly. Whether or not that's a good decision for Microsoft, we can add very low-cost encryption and authentication to our communication with those servers.
Okay, and let's say a provider wants to cache a very popular download from a FTP server. Would you have any solution for that? Or do you consider it insecure by design?
So you mean if everybody's distributing some file, like let's say there's an operating system update and thousands of people distribute that operating system update, hey, that's where PGP does a great job. So of course, if you've got PGP working, if you've got HTTPS working, if you've got one of the security solutions out there actually installed for you, then great. I don't mean to say that these are bad things. What I'm worried about are the 99% of web servers that are using HTTP. I'm worried about the 99% of Google's content that is only available over HTTP, like all the images and all the maps. I'm worried about everything where the current solutions aren't doing anything, all of the parts of the internet that are unencrypted and unauthenticated right now. We can do something about that.
Okay, so you don't mean CurveCP to replace TCP, but to stand next to TCP?
Well, there's certainly applications where you don't actually care about security, like you're doing network testing, or if somebody's doing a denial of service attack, then I don't think they care about security for their packets, so they might as well use TCP. But
Or the example with the big file where you said I can sign it using PGP. If I use CurveCP, I also have to encrypt it for every download, so I can't cache it.
Yeah, so if you're using PGP and thousands of sites have the file that you're trying to get, then you talk to one of those servers, you get the copy of the file from that server. Of course, at the end of it, you'll check a PGP signature, and then you'll be sure that you have the right file from the original distributor of that file. At the same time, you might be a little bit worried. Suppose you're downloading the file, and then suddenly your connection drops. Now, it could be because somebody, like a rogue government or just a random attacker, has decided to inject a TCP reset packet into the network, or has decided to forge a TCP packet with an appropriate sequence number, and suddenly your connection drops. And what do you do? Well, you try making another connection and download it, and suddenly your connection drops again. And you waste a huge amount of time trying to get this file because somebody is interfering with your network communication. Now, if you use CurveCP instead of TCP at that stage, then you're actually protected pretty well against somebody forging packets, unless they're flooding the whole network, which is a lot more resources for the attacker. So there's a lot fewer victims who can be flooded at the same time. Still, at the end of the day, assuming that the file is sent all the way to your computer, then you have PGP telling you that, yes, you have a valid copy of the file. And it doesn't really matter whether you used TCP or something else to get the file.
Okay, one last question. When do you think this will be deployed? In which year?
2011.
Wow. Fever, any more questions?
Any comments about KubeHash and SHA-3?
SHA-3 has five very good candidates, which I think all of them will be very good choices. I admit that I've only looked at four of them in detail, based on those four, I would say that whichever one SHA-3 ends up being, it's going to be just fine. At the same time, I think SHA-2 is also holding up reasonably well, despite being an NSA design. SHA-1 and SHA-0 are pretty bad. Anybody using SHA-0 should have moved away from it years ago. Anybody using SHA-1 should be moving away from it. But SHA-2 is okay. SHA-3 will certainly be fine, and as all of these algorithms have had extensive cryptanalytic scrutiny. And that's what you need if you want your cryptography to survive, is you need to make sure that cryptanalysts have looked at it, that you've got a bunch of people thinking about it the same way the attackers do, and making sure that the attackers aren't going to surprise us. And that's pretty much happened with SHA-3. Over the next year, there's going to be even more scrutiny of the five finalist algorithms, and then whichever one gets chosen is certainly going to be one that everybody's very confident in. So for hash functions, we're going to be just fine once SHA-3 is selected. Even SHA-2 has had a lot of scrutiny, but SHA-3 will certainly be just great.
Eric Taves and HC talking to Dan Bernstein about his 27C3 talk, High Speed, High Security Cryptography, Encrypting and Authenticating the Whole Internet. Music by Kevin MacLeod. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.